you know, getting back to 100%, it's impossible. I don't think I'll ever get back to 100% in my career. But, you know, I felt comfortable where I knew I could get on the floor and help my team win.
That is a banged up LeBron James. Doing the math on his mortality after spending more time and money on physical conditioning than pretty much anyone. And now trying desperately to make another Lakers title run. Today, we add up what is really at stake in these playoffs, and we explain why the King is looking and sounding like he never has before. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, May 11th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Brian, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
So, okay, Brian sounds good to me, by the way.
Yeah, I it depends on how close I am to this mic. Oh, Pablo, you are one son of a gun.
We are absolutely using that. Brian Windhorst is a senior writer for ESPN, the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, and a native of Akron, Ohio, who's covered LeBron James since high school. And he gives a good sound check. So, Brian, when you watch LeBron and the Lakers right now, or rather you watch LeBron watch the Lakers since he's been on the bench for like all but two of the last 25 games, I believe, is he feeling and sounding a little existential to you?
He's like, a CPU that's constantly processing. You know, one of LeBron's greatest traits is his awareness and the way he can sort of see forward. I mean, he had the ability to see the future and evaluate the future and have perspective when he was 18 in ways that 50-year-olds don't. One of the great all-time stories with him with that is him turning down a $10 million cashier's check to sign with Reebok because he knew that the offers were going to get better. He knew that Nike hadn't pitched yet and Adidas hadn't pitched yet. And to be living in government-assisted housing and being told he could take a $10 million check with him that moment, you know, basically Reebok ran a play on him that studios ran on young musical artists for decades, trying to show him a bag full of money and get the better long-term deal. And now he's got a billion-dollar deal with Nike. So when you look at what this means for this Lakers season, it's that he's, I think, constantly been trying to judge what is best for our team long term. And I think that when he came back from that ankle injury initially, where he just had no explosion, I mean, he ran okay. Like if you saw him running up and down the court, it wasn't like he was dragging that leg. When he would go to plant, it was just dead. There was no juice, no explosion whatsoever. So him judging, like, how do I moderate my recovery from this injury while giving my team an opportunity to not fall too far? I honestly think, and only he could answer this, but I honestly think he came to the conclusion that he couldn't continue playing and that his team was going to be a play-in team.
LeBron, down he goes and he grabs his ankle. LeBron with his right ankle, and he's hurt.
You know, the Lakers have tried to keep some of it under wraps. You know, they didn't announce a time frame, but it kind of got out there that they were looking at 4 to 6 weeks right from the start. The high ankle sprains are very different than low ankle sprains. And I've had football players, you know, tell me, and I've read about how it affects them for 6+ months that their ankle doesn't feel right. And so for a guy who's used to that kind of recovery and that kind of resiliency to have an injury that he is having trouble shaking is obviously mentally daunting as well as physically.
Yeah, so let's recap things for people who maybe went into hibernation and then just planned to wake up for when the postseason was beginning to sort of come into some sort of clarity. Because the Lakers right now are the seventh seed in the West. They're a game behind the Portland Trail Blazers, who they just lost to several days ago. LeBron James is not yet back, although he is targeting a return on Tuesday night against the Knicks. And Anthony Davis now is in this position to pick up the slack as he did against the Suns in their win on Sunday, Brian.
So I would say that in the last 10 days, they've had two of their best wins of the season, which is they beat the Denver Nuggets, who at the time were red hot, and they beat the Phoenix Suns, who were challenging for the number one seed in the West Conference. And that just shows you that it's in there. And that Anthony Davis has actually played pretty well over the last three games. He had the best game of the season against the Suns on Sunday, as 42 points and 12 rebounds.
Yes.
Was dominant in the fourth quarter of that game.
Unbelievable. I mean, Brian, I think that was the best I've seen him play since he won the title in the NBA bubble with LeBron James.
Yeah, he was great. And if LeBron is able to come back and even be 75%, they're very dangerous. And, you know, here's the thing about the Lakers. They are not a very good offensive team at all. They are completely built to be a great defensive team. And when Anthony Davis got hurt in February, they were the number one defensive team in the league.
Mm.
But then here's the problem, Pablo. They are 11th in the league on defense since Anthony Davis came back. And that is an improved number. 4 or 5 days ago, it was down as far as 20th. Mm. And you would say, well, wait a minute. One of your best defensive players comes back and your defense gets worse.
Yeah, so what's going on there?
A dozen different things. Like I said, some of the injuries, maybe some fatigue, maybe they let their guard down when Anthony Davis came back, thinking that they finally had their injection of return talent. So really, at the end of the day, the Lakers have no chance if they don't go back to playing elite-level defense and LeBron isn't really healthy.
Yeah, it's funny, Brian, because I can imagine this postseason going two very different opposite ways. On the one hand, it's like, man, of course the Lakers won the title. They have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That is the one universe that I think, if you listen to people like Alex Caruso after the Suns game, that's kind of the vibe that they're putting out in public.
The beast is waking up. You know, we're starting to see vintage AD, and for us, it's just about getting to the point to where we're playing our best basketball in a couple days from now, or a couple weeks from now.
The other one, of course, has LeBron and Anthony Davis both banged up in ways that we don't fully understand yet. What is actually wrong with Anthony Davis right now? Is he healthy because there was this ankle injury of his own that turned into a back injury a couple games ago? I never really know with him what degree of fragility we're dealing with.
Well, I doubt we would get an honest answer about that injury, that second injury. But my speculation, one of the reasons why the Lakers have been dealing with just difficult losses lately is because their schedule has been laden with back-to-back games. As the league just forces through this season.
There are so many back-to-backs,
right,
man.
In fact, six of the Lakers' last eight games are involved in back-to-back sets. And so what I can't prove this, and only Anthony Davis would know, but I suspect, you know, they were down 20 points when he turned his ankle. And the next night they were playing a game in Portland.
Mm.
So I suspect that they shut Anthony Davis down in that game and said, I'm going to save you until tomorrow when we have to go full bore in Portland.
The cost-benefit analysis of, do we get him back for this game? No, let's save him. That would be the theory.
I suspect that was the case. As far as his, his tendonitis around his Achilles, I think that can be traced back to the insane schedule that the Lakers have had to play. Whereas LeBron's injury was a guy landed on him, and it was just a freak injury. And, you know, LeBron has never had a high ankle sprain before. He knows his body better than anybody, but I would speculate that he doesn't know how he's going to feel in 10 days when he's potentially in the first round of a playoff series.
The sense that you get from afar, Brian, of whether this season is something that the Los Angeles Lakers are enjoying or not, having had this historically brief offseason and then hearing LeBron talk about mortality, basically, as he battles injuries, does this feel like a year they're having fun playing in?
I don't think there's many teams having fun in the NBA right now. Even if they've been vaccinated, they're having to get, COVID testing heavily. They've been confined to their hotel rooms for a majority of the season. So even when they're home, they've been in what Adam Silver calls work quarantine.
It's a great euphemism, by the way.
Yeah, it sounds nice, but really it's miserable. You're allowed to leave your house to work. There was even a while where they had that outbreak across the league in January and February, where they tightened the rules, where they said you're only allowed to go outside for an hour. You could go for a jog or a walk, but you couldn't even technically, I don't think, play golf. And I think, you know, LeBron has talked numerous times about how it was not welcome that they were expected to come back and play on Christmas. It was not welcome that they would have to go play at this All-Star game in Atlanta that, you know, sort of was squeezed in by the NBA. It was not welcome, the restrictions that they had when they were on the road to tamp down the virus. So I would not say that this has been a season of fun.
The idea, Bri, that LeBron had all of these public critiques and desires, is that something that he expected to go differently? Are those comments that he says, in your mind, because he wants change or because he tried to get change behind the scenes, didn't get it, and now all he has left to do here is sort of air these grievances?
Yeah, well, he has had some success in years past getting what he's wanted.
Right. Certainly
where he's gone to play, he has changed teams liberally. At one point, he didn't think it was fair that the NBA champs should have to play on the road on Christmas because he had to do that in Miami. And so he petitioned the league and the league changed it. He didn't think it was fair that guys who participated in the All-Star game would have no midseason break. So Adam Silver adjusted the schedule to build in more time so that the guys in the All-Star break could at least get a couple of days off.
Mm-hmm.
He had the CBA altered that benefited his contract so that he could sign for more money because there was some rules about how much guaranteed money you could have in your contract after you were age 36. And he was the vice president of the owner of the Players Association when they got that rule for us. Although he obviously has earned all of these favors and more. And, you know, every money that he makes is underpaid by what he's brought to the league.
Absolutely right.
He definitely, over this last decade, has gotten used to being able to apply pressure in the right spots.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess let me just ask you bluntly then, Brian. Given the way we've seen this season play out behind the scenes on these Zoom calls in which LeBron James is getting outvoted by a jury of his peers, as it were, is it a sign that maybe his power, his influence is eroding to some extent?
No, I think it's all a circumstance of the league. For the last 18 months, there's been a giant door open with money flying out of it for all sports leagues, but particularly the NBA. And the union and the league have done everything that they can to try to push it closed. I don't think it has anything to do with his power base other than the fact that he can't overcome the giant forces that have hit the world. And they are definitely inconveniences for him, but they are inconveniences that he begrudgingly is tolerating. And I think many of us go to do things in life that we begrudgingly tolerate. And were we to have to give interviews while we were doing those, they would sound a lot like what LeBron is saying these days.
All right, Brian, after the break, I want to begrudgingly have you back to discuss this play-in round that I still don't fully understand. And I want to talk about the fact that the Lakers and the Warriors might just help shut that door out of which all of that money is flying out closed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Brian, I am trying to understand and explain the play-in round to other people, and I struggle with it. So can you help me understand what this is and how it works?
Well, if we go back to 30,000 feet, Pablo, in the last 5 to 7 years, there has been rampant tanking that has been taking place by teams at the bottom end of the standings. Part of it is a survival tactic because in the NBA, there is only three ways to get players. You sign them, you trade for them, and you draft them. If you are a small market or a market that is cold weather that players aren't desiring to play in, it's very difficult to sign the players. And more, we have seen superstar players who come available for trade controlling their trade destinations. And when it came down to it, Anthony Davis and James Harden said, I want to play for that team over there. And they got what they wanted. So if you're a team that can't draw the player in free agency and also can't be selected as a team to be traded to, it puts even more pressure on your draft position.
Yes.
So you see teams that are sort of desperate doing whatever they can to get into that spot. And a team like Oklahoma City, for example, this year, they are at the beginning of a rebuild. They are not going to be signing any superstar free agents, and they are not going to probably be having anybody force a trade there. And so they're like, look, we have to put arguably the worst team in league history on the court for the last 6 weeks.
It's ridiculously bad.
That's right. And so this play-in tournament was something that was on the boards for several years as an anti-tanking measure. And this year, not only is it an anti-tanking measure, it has the special added benefit of being an injection of revenue.
So this new product, Brian, and the 30,000-foot view explains how it is that the NBA is so enthusiastic about this. In this case, just give me the very brass tacks, playing round for dummies, reason why this will add revenue.
Well, these games are on ESPN, national television games. In a normal year, ESPN would have had its full complement of games and Turner would have had its full complement of games. And the play-in tournament could have been sold like a new package. Just like the NFL created Thursday Night Football. The NFL has turned its schedule release into a big event and is going to play multiple games on Christmas because they're targeting the NBA. So they've done such a great job creating new products to drive revenue. The NBA has not done as good of a job. And so this is an effort by the NBA to create a new product to sell. And if Adam Silver gets his dream wish, maybe later on a mid-season tournament as well.
So this idea, Brian, that the NBA has found a way to both boost the value of the regular season such that all of those games, the 82 games that so often get lost in the shuffle as we look ahead to the playoffs in perpetuity, those matter more. And then you have this package, this product that is a television show that you get to then create out of whole cloth and sell to media rights holders like ESPN, like Turner, like Disney. And then you have presumably at some point ticket sales that will then even further boost that when fans get to attend. All of which raises the question now of why is it that LeBron James hates this so much?
Whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that need to be fired. But whatever.
Because his team is penalized by it as opposed to benefiting from it. I really think that you almost have to ignore the teams that are involved in this, their opinions. You know, so for example, Monty Williams, the coach of the Phoenix Suns, has talked about how he thinks it's such a disadvantage for the top seeds to not know who their opponents are going to be.
For me, I think when you put yourself in a position to be at the top of the league, there should be a benefit to that and don't really get that being a one or two seed because you're trying to figure out who you're going to play.
The Suns are in second and very likely will have to await a play-in winner. It's such a disadvantage. And he's even, I believe, gone so far as to say that the top two seeds should start this each series up 1-0 because of this disadvantage.
So maybe they can figure out a way, you know, if you're in the play-in tournament, it's kind of goofy, but it's the way my head works. If you make it into the playoffs, you start down, you know, a game.
A year ago, the Phoenix Suns, I believe, finished 9th or 10th. I think actually it was 10th in the Western Conference and missed a chance to play in the bubble by a game or two. I suspect that Monty Williams would have felt completely differently if the setup was the same. He would have said, this play-in tournament is great. So you just can't take the opinions of people who are materially affected by it. Of course, the team in seventh is going to be furious about it. And the team in sixth is like, sounds good to us. That's human nature.
So it's also the case, though, that in LeBron's circumstance in particular, like, he was on the record in favor of it, not to go like all gotcha politics on LeBron here, Brian, but I think it's hilarious that we heard LeBron be very much in favor of it before it was his team.
You know, I mean, if there's 5 or 10 games left, why not the five? Why not those guys battle it out? How about just make them play each other all 5 games?
Why not a best of 3 play-in?
That too. There could be a best out of a 3-team play-in.
That's right. So the other thing about LeBron is, you take a guy who does several hundred interviews a year over the course of 2 decades, you're going to be able to find some, you know, some wavering on some evolution on some topics.
He has been on camera giving answers and, to his credit, consistently taking questions for, 20 plus years now.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm going to give him a pass on that. But again, ultimately, at the end of the day, the more money that comes into the NBA, the more money goes to the players. And so, you know, I know it's hard to believe in a league that is, you know, draped in excess, play for teams owned by billionaires. But really, it's a very socialistic system. Mm-hmm. The very richest players in the league subsidize the mid-level and lower-level players. And so it's a bad deal for LeBron. It's a bad deal for the Los Angeles Lakers. The Los Angeles Lakers take all of the money that they make and they send like a giant check every year that goes to the Memphis Grizzlies and the Charlotte Hornets because they subsidize the league. You know, all those jerseys LeBron sells, he doesn't see any more money from that than any other player. It's all distributed relatively equally based on seniority. It's just that's the way it is. And so you are going to run into situations where individual players are disadvantaged. And we happen to do that with LeBron in front of a microphone.
Speaking of which, by the way, there was this moment, Brian, on Saturday when Steph Curry was asked about the play-in game.
What are your thoughts on the play-in tournament in general, given some of the stars that can end up sort of in those matchups?
It is what it is, and we want to be in there because that's where we are in the standings, and that's the only way we're going to get to, most likely going to get to the actual playoffs. So no matter what team it is, whatever it is, we have to be able to give ourselves life at the end of the season to be in that situation. Just enjoy what that means for a team that's been through what we've been through this whole season.
And his response after being asked if he thought the NBA was hoping for a Warriors versus Lakers matchup in that 7-8 seeded game. He basically said nothing audible that we could play for you on a podcast.
Think the league might enjoy Lakers Warriors 7-8 in the play-in.
But his face, Brian, how would you describe his face, his reaction physically?
Like anybody would react in that spot.
That's a meme.
I mean, he was grinning and nodding like a human meme, an animated GIF on loop for like 10 seconds straight. And so all of it just to say that, like, if I'm being honest here, I am incredibly excited by that notion. That sounds amazing. The Warriors and the Lakers, two of the biggest TV audience drivers, two of the most fun teams, when healthy, at their best in the league, they're fighting for their lives against each other in what is a winner-go-home scenario, Brian. Tell me how this could work, and explain, by the way, just the mechanics of how these games will sort of unfold.
Well, picture it as if you booked a flight 6 months ago and you got the window seat or the aisle seat in the exit row, whatever you got, and you were all planning for that, and you know, you got on the plane and all of a sudden the seat was broken and you had to go to a middle seat in the back. You'd be really, really angry. Meanwhile, the guy who just found out he had to go somewhere and needs to get somewhere, is standing by, and right before they close the door, they say, there's a seat for you, sir, and it's a middle seat in the back. You go, oh, my God, I'm so glad to be here. And the guy sitting right across the other middle seat is fuming mad. But you're both on the plane in the same spot. Your perspective is just different. Here are the Golden State Warriors. You know, their whole world has changed. They were the second worst team in the league last year, whatever. This year, Klay Thompson goes down in the preseason. They have all these other injuries. James Wiseman gets knocked out for the year. They're just thrilled that they're going to be invited to the party. And then you have the Lakers, who were in first place in February before LeBron and AD got hurt, who all of a sudden have been given the ticket for the middle seat in the back. So that's kind of the way that you why Steph is smiling, all excited, and LeBron is, you know, furious and cursing. Okay, so it's important to realize that this is not a one and done. The team that's in seventh will have home court advantage, so that will almost certainly be the Lakers. And the game will be played at Staples Center. Whoever wins that game gets the seventh seed. Go forth to the Suns, to Phoenix. Have a nice day. Good luck in the playoffs. The team that loses can stay right where they are, and they will go turn on the game to watch the number 9 and 10 seeds play each other. Those teams will play at the number 9 seeds' home court. The winner of that game advances to play the loser of 8 and 7. Number 10, see you next season. The loser of game 1 plays the winner of game 2, and the winner of that game advances to number the 8th seed. We'll see you in Utah, most likely. So it means if you're the 7 or 8 seed, you have a double elimination. You know, it's built in of a hierarchy just within 7, 8, 9, 10. So I think a lot of thought was put into this, but the situation, the hand that the Lakers are still holding is still not that bad. And it is extra games for sure. And the conference tournament basically is a money grab. We play 3 months of conference basketball. Everybody plays itself twice. I think we have a pretty good idea who the best team is. You went 16-0 in the conference and you lose the first round. You're not the champions of the league, sir. But you win 3 games in 4 days. You, sir, have our automatic bid. It's the money grab for that, too, and people love it. They That's love right. conference tournaments.
That's right. Okay, Brian, up next, I want to dive into more of the chaos that is this play-in tournament and just how different this NBA postseason overall is about to look.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Brian, I gather that the idea behind this play-in tournament is to inject, like, some college basketball-style chaos, some excitement, some anarchy into the end of the season to basically get the NBA their own version of March Madness.
That's right, which is why the single-game one-offs take on a whole new level, why I think they will be popular. The idea really took – I mean, people have been floating this around for a decade plus, but the idea really took root – maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when it just so happened the way the schedule played out that the Denver Nuggets played the Minnesota Timberwolves on the last day of the season for the last playoff spot. That game turned out to be one of the more entertaining games we saw for a while, and people were not clamoring nationally to watch the Nuggets and Wolves play typically. You may ask the question, why does the NBA play 7-game series? Why
Yes.
4 7-game series? The answer, Pablo, is because they couldn't get away with best of 9. Because I think you have to understand the revenue situation that happens in the playoffs.
Yeah, we're talking about TV products again, aren't we?
Yes. The NBA the players do not get paid for the postseason. Their contracts pay them for those 82 games during the regular season. There is a bonus pool that gets paid out of television money, and you get more money the further you go. But their contracts call for those 82 regular season games. So now you move into the postseason where the ratings are higher, the majority of the television money is there so that they can televise postseason games. And in the arena, they can charge sometimes 50 to 100% more for tickets and yet not pay the players anything. So the profit margin on a playoff game is enormous in a normal year where you can have full arenas. And so what the league needs is more playoff games. The regular season is there to pay the bills. The postseason is there to make the money.
That feels like one of the greatest deals in business history. For the owners, to be clear.
That's right. This is why LeBron feels a little bit exploited. But the person who came up with this, or the people came up with this, are not only not getting fired, they're going to get promoted.
So, Brian, as we look ahead to a particularly fraught and fascinating television product that is the NBA postseason, are you expecting then an unusual amount of chaos?
There's two things I'm looking at. Number one, we've had the most wild offensive season in league history for 100 different reasons. We're regularly seeing games go like 135, 128 or whatever. In the playoffs, typically we see defenses roar back. Will we see the return of defense once these teams can all have equal rest and they can actually have practices and game planning sessions? The second thing I'm interested in is the imbalance of home court advantage. Some of these teams will have full potential capacity or close to full capacity. You know, the Utah Jazz, who have the number one seed right now in the Western Conference, might be able to get 10 or 12,000 people into their arena by the time we get to the middle of the playoffs. And that arena is tough in general, whereas they may end up playing the Lakers in the first round. The Lakers may have a few thousand people at Staples Center, which is cavernous. There could be a true home court advantage differential.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, I'll get you out on just this notion. You've been covering LeBron, as I say, all the time for longer than any human being on this planet. Where are you as our NBA business correspondent on just the long trajectory of that stock and how we should all feel about holding it still?
Well, I know that people say that it's always better to sell too early than too late.
Right.
And that, you know, from a team standpoint, it's all, I think it was Blanche Rickey who said it's always better to trade a guy a year too early than a year too late. I have made the decision that if I am regarded as a fool for being late on giving up on LeBron, then that is a title I will accept. I will retain my stock, and that is why I say that while there's a lot of concern about the Lakers and their situation and their unfairness, if I had made a bet on the Lakers to win the title, I would not be destroying that ticket. I'm not saying I would go put more money on it, but I would hold that ticket because we have repeatedly seen LeBron in the playoffs deliver. We have really never seen a run like this of this many years. A guy who is trying to make a finals this year, 14 years after he made his first finals. But I really feel like if LeBron is on the active roster and in the game, his team has a chance. And I think that'll be put to the test this year, and I'll stay comfortably on that side of the ledger.
Brian Windhorst, the wisest fool that I know, I thank you for your diamond hands on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.